Good evening, November 12th, 2009. James McCanny going right into the show tonight. A tremendous amount of material, and my goodness, is the misinformation flowing out there now. This is unbelievable. And we knew this was coming. But this past week, NASA announced an all-out attack on 2012. But as I've said before, this is all a planned dog and pony show to not debunk 2012 so much, but to go right at a thing called Planet X. And so anyway, it's almost humorous to read this article, and I'll just read it right as it came off the press. And now just a little history for people out there who are new, and I know my long-term fans are very tuned to this whole process, that in 2003 and prior, for actually about almost 8 years, there was a big program to cause Looney Tunes to be surrounding the topic of Planet X. And then, of course, in rides the white hat cowboys of NASA and its outreach program people to debunk it and say that it's all crazy. And, of course, when it never happened, then they could point to it and say, look at all those crazy people talking about this Planet X topic. And so literally they are admitting that this now got moved to 2012, December 21st, and the same issue. They're trying to get the public away from thinking about 2012. They had Hollywood make a movie about this. This is a big issue to them. In fact, it's just unbelievable the amount of effort being put into debunk 2012. And of course, it's always a curveball. The 2012, everything you hear, it's on, you know, people writing new books, a whole laundry list of new authors talking about 2012, and in the background, what's really the target is this concept that there is something out there that could come into the solar system that could wreak havoc. And of course, they put twists and turns on that, and they only talk in terms of a planet. Of course, if anything big did come into the solar system, it would look like a big comet. So the amount of subtle misinformation here is incredible. But anyway, as I said this past, I think Monday, NASA went on an all-out news media blitz, which means internet, news media, the major league news media, attacking this idea of 2012. Just as the movie comes out, and the movie, of course, begins with this big planet coming in and crashes with Earth, causing devastation to all of Earth. You know, and everything happens, pole shifts or whatever. But anyway, here's the news article. Now watch how subtly they start with 2012, but go immediately to the topic of Planet X, which is the real target. So here it goes. Here's just reading right out of the newspaper. If such a collision, oops, let me go up to the beginning. Sorry, I'm on page two. Okay, let me go up to page one here. Oops, I'm scrolling, just a second. Okay, NASA says the world is not coming to an end in 2012. The world is not coming to an end on December 21st, 2012. The U.S. Space Agency insisted Monday in a rare campaign to dispel rumors fueled by internet and the Hollywood movie. Gee, I wonder who got them to make the Hollywood movie. Sony Pictures' latest release, big screen offering 2012, arrives in theaters on Friday. And with a $20 million production about to end the world's about the end of the world, supposedly based on myths backed by the Mayan calendar. And of course, all of that, as I've been saying all along, is bunk. But, of course, now the white hats have to come in. Okay, let me continue to read. The doomsday scenario revolves around claims that the end of time will come as an obscure Planet X, or Nibiru, heads toward or collides into Earth. The mysterious planet was supposedly discovered by the Sumerians, according to claims by pseudoscientists, paranormal activity enthusiasts, and internet theorists. Listen to this. And it's really true, but gee, guess who put all those people there? They did. This is all a big coordinated, both sides coordinated by the same group. And, okay, let me read on. Some websites accuse NASA of concealing the truth on the wayward planet's existence, but the U.S. Space Agency denounced such stories as an internet hoax. There is no factual basis for these claims, NASA said in a question and answer posting on its website. Well, gee, there's no names associated this, just NASA. But anyway, okay, reading on. If such a collision were real, astronomers would have been tracking it for at least the past decade, and it would now be visible to the naked eye, it added. Obviously, it does not exist. And of course, just a little aside note, we have had comets come into the solar system, some of the biggest ones that were totally missed by all of the NASA equipment and NASA scientists. So, anyway, but this is a funny story. Now it says, the article goes on, credible scientists worldwide know of no threat associated with 2012, NASA insisted. Initial theories set the disaster for May 2003. See how they bring in the Zetaquack stuff here. This is a well-coordinated public disinformation campaign, not against 2012, but against the idea of a Planet X type object. You now see what the real target has been all along. Initial theories set the disaster for May 2003, but when nothing happened, the date was moved forward to winter solstice 2012 to coincide with the end of the cycle of the ancient Mayan calendar, which, of course, is bunk too. But NASA insisted the Mayan calendar, in fact, does not end on that date, as another period begins immediately afterwards, said that there are no planetary alignments on the horizon for the next few decades. Who said anything about planetary alignments? So you see, they're creating story. They've created the 2012 side so they could come in and debunk it. But the real target is to keep anybody from thinking about Planet X. And as I said, the original May 2003 Zetaquack crazy lady talks to aliens story was provided also by the same disinformation crew. Let me finish reading the article here. And even if the planets were to line up as some have forecast, the effect on our planet would be negligible, which is actually true. So they've created the ridiculous side, bad science, and then debunked it. Continuing on reading. Among the other theories NASA has set out to debunk are that geomagnetic storms, a pole reversal or unsteadiness in Earth's crustal plates might befall the planet. Now they talk a little bit about comets. Now this is interesting. Almost the last line. Okay, it says, and while comets and asteroids have always hit the Earth, big ones are very rare, NASA noted. The last major impact was believed to be 65 million years ago, spurring the end of the dinosaurs. And, of course, that is subtly referring to the Dirty Snowball Comet model, which they are hanging on to with a death grip. Last sentence of the article. We have already determined that there are no threatening asteroids as large as the one that killed the dinosaurs, the space agency said. Wow. Are they working overtime to destroy any concept in the public's mind regarding an object called Planet X? But as I've said many times, there are many, many Planet X objects out there, and NASA has literally found thousands of them, and they may know about a few that have Earth with its name on it, so to speak. But just one last note, remember that they keep talking about it as it were a planet, which in people's minds means round, a big round orange object or something. But as I said all along, it will look like a giant raging comet. Okay, so the main science topic tonight is bad science related to the space elevator. More NASA misinformation in the news. It seems NASA these days is not doing anything as far as going into space, but spending most of their time debunking, odd other issues. So, anyway, I will be giving the top 10 reasons why the space elevator will not work and why it's just a big smokescreen, NASA is actually funding this idea to build an elevator over 23,000 miles long up from the surface of the Earth into outer space to get things into space. But as you'll see when I describe the problems with this, that it is just junk science and more smokescreen. Now NASA can pretend like it's doing something and not doing anything. Just quickly. Now, this past week, I posted a sale. I called it a blowout sale on my webpage. And here's basically the situation. Let's be honest. This economy is already crashed. But as soon as the New Year comes around, it's really going to crash. In fact, we are suspecting, and I would say it would be safe to predict, that there will be no postal service or sketchy postal service. We're moving into the status of a third world country, something I've said has been planned for a very long time. And so the United States will probably not have reliable delivery services. And add in, say, something like a H1N1 planned flu epidemic, which will shut things down further. This economy is going to go, it's going to tank. Let's put it that way. More planned layoffs across the country, across the board, industry and businesses are just simply planning mass layoffs because simply they don't have the money. There is currently running government reported unemployment at 10%. It's actually probably about 20 to 25% because, of course, they don't count the people that have fallen off the end of the system that don't count anymore in their statistics, something that has been a lie for ongoing for ages. So at any rate, yeah, quite the strange set of circumstances, but the bottom line is this might be the last time that people get a chance to get a decent water filter, a real one, and have it sitting there with all of the filters. So, by the way, everything in the water filter, the Dalton water filters, everything is on sale. And the idea is, instead of buying Barbie and Ken dolls for Christmas, get your friends to get something that really matters, a water filter, because, when the electricity goes out, I don't care if you live on a farm and you have a well, you're probably going to be using surface water. So at any rate, quickly, here's the sales situation. The two larger water filters, the stainless steel full-size Dalton and the plastic, quite a bit larger water filter, which was made specifically so we could have a larger unit at a lesser cost and will produce up to 50 gallons per day of clean, fresh water. And remember that every person per day minimum needs 5 gallons of fresh water for washing, for cleanliness, for drinking, for cooking, for making sprouts, whatever you do. And then, of course, you can use these in your kitchen when there's not an emergency. They're not simply an emergency object. I use mine every day. I carry it with me on trips. I take it camping. This is my one best friend, and if there's an emergency, it'll save your life. So, at any rate, very quickly, the stainless steel full-size Dalton water filter, normally $319, $289, so that's like $30 off. Plus, you get the free WRX 911 emergency radio, free shipping to the 50 states, and an added bonus, the Surviving Planet X Passage pamphlet. The plastic unit, the high-density polyethylene plastic unit, normally $219, which includes free shipping to the 50 states, now $199, so that's $20 off. Plus, you get the free shipping to the 50 states and an added bonus, the Surviving Planet X Passage pamphlet included in that. The small personal Dalton water filter, the travel emergency, it's about 1 liter. I carry it with me when I travel, put it in your carry-on bag or whatever. Normally $89.95, now $69.95, $20 off of that. And then last but not least, I've set up a package of my books. So it's the Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book, the Surviving Planet X Passage pamphlet, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection, and the weather book, the Principia Meteorologia. Those four, plus the three DVDs set, and the Southwest American CD pictures. Normally that would be $140 for that package, $99 now, and you can go to the webpage, JMCC, S is in Sam, C is in Charlie, I is in Indigo.com, that's just seven letters, JMCCSCI.com, and I saved something for last, because this is something that I believe everybody should really be on top of. The water filters, elements, the Dalton White Ceramic Super Sterisol water filter elements normally are $89 for a pair, for a set. And I know there's a lot of people out there with water filters. Any of these white ceramic filters will work in any of the water filters that you may have. They're all actually modeled after the Dalton water filter. So the little holes down in the bottom of the upper tank, that is compatible with these. Normally $89 for a pair. Now you get $89 for a set or a pair or two of them. Now you'll get two sets for $130, which is huge. It's basically you get the second set for below wholesale cost. And so it's really, if you want to stock up now or get some for your friends or replace your old water filter elements, now is the time to do it. Once again, $130 for two sets of the Dalton ceramic white super sterisol filters, filter elements. And you're never going to find a better deal than that. On to the main show topic. I'm going to start something semi-regularly here. I get so much fan mail, emails, and it's really great. A lot of times I read this and I answer to the particular fan, but this time I'm going to start to read some of these. I'll just pick some that are at random, or actually some that I actually like. Here's one, an email came in. It says, "Hi, Professor. Been following your work for some years now. Would you be so kind to direct me to the most reliable source of information about the origin of humans? Thanks in advance," and then the name. So, okay, this is a great question, because what you learned in high school, what you learned in college, what you learned in grade school about where the human race came from is garbage. It couldn't possibly be true that 7,000 years ago the man crawled out of the Mesopotamian Valley and somehow populated the earth, and the Mayans, down the little teeny Mayans in the South American natives, aboriginal, pre-Columbian natives, that they somehow came across this bridge across Alaska from Russia. It's just absolute nonsense that all of these different races evolved out of one single original race that came out of Mesopotamia only 7,000 years ago. The 7 foot tall black man from Africa, or the pygmies of Africa versus the Mayans versus the Oriental cultures. Absolutely ridiculous that these all came within the last 7,000 years. Clearly something else happened, and what happened is the planet had been very populated for a long time, very long stretch of time. There were catastrophes, but the big one hit within the last 10,000 years. Velikovsky puts it at 3,500 years ago. That, I would say, is a top contender for the dates, although, it could be in that era. But there were the Egyptian priest cults told Solon that it was they had five such disasters in their past 10,000 years ago. So obviously something has been going on here. The Earth just doesn't kick up and do this all by itself. So clearly something is going on. I'd say we probably have more than one Nibiru type object that's active coming into the solar system. But at any rate, be that as it may, remember that the event 3,500 years ago, if that's in fact what the real date was the Venus event, where the Venus came in as a large comet, probably an errant partner from a bigger object that came in, possibly a Nibiru type of object. But Venus, eventually the comet that raged through the solar system, stripped Mars of its atmosphere and oceans, and came by Earth twice. We know that from the Mayan calendar. Gee, isn't it funny that NASA never mentions that when they talk about the Mayan calendar, the two incidents of Quetzalcoatl. Well, of course, they don't want to go there because that's what they're trying to keep you from understanding. But at any rate, that's when the big one came down and literally just about destroyed the Earth and the human race. So all of these already developed populations were separated. And so eventually they started to discover, as they expanded and became successful again, as they recovered from the damage to Earth and started coming out, and as we came out of the glaciation and the ice ages and the man started traveling, the Earth had been tilted about 30 degrees on its poles, causing, so the people started expanding, succeeding, and traveling, and then eventually discovering one another. So when Columbus came across, he discovered the natives, much to his surprise, already living in what we now call Latin America and the Caribbean islands. So at any rate, but another great source for information on the origin of humans is the Colbrin, K-O-L-B-R-I-N, and don't get the one on the internet, the one with the big orange ball on it. That's the disinformation crew, Colbrin. You see how big this topic is. They had to steal the Colbrin and put out a phony version to fool the public. But go to ChaldeanTrust.org. That's C-U-L-D-R-I-A-N, Chaldean. Oops, let me do that again. Chaldean. C-U-L-D-I-A-N, Trust.org, and that's where you'll get the real Colbrin, K-O-L-B-R-I-N. And in the very beginning, it talks literally about the origin of man. And, okay, so on to another email from a fan. It says, "Hi, Jim, thanks for the great show. What's your take on this?" And then it gives a name, and I'm not going to use people's name, but it talks about 2012, and it says, "Is this another Zeta alien talk type of hoax? Here's the link to the website. Comment on your site and radio broadcast would be welcomed." Okay, and so at any rate, it refers to a website where another Nuvo 2012 author. And so at any rate, you simply put, now that I gave my big spiel here on NASA and the big disinformation campaign, these are all of these new authors coming out of the woodwork, people you've never heard before, but all of a sudden are mini experts on 2012 and the Mayan calendar. If you see these books, and I collect them just for a joke, not for a joke, but I, you know, just to keep them archived to trace this disinformation campaign. They all are produced out of the same basic mold. A new author, never heard from before, claiming to have 30 years of studying and experience. And that's what always funny too, is there all of a sudden you have somebody claiming 30 years of experience, but nobody's ever heard of them before. That's, you know, pretty much a joke right there. But at any rate, clearly this is all a well-coordinated plan, disinformation. First you get the public interested in 2012, then you slam dunk them and tell them that it doesn't exist. So at any rate, that's my opinion on that. I'm making a note here. Bill? Excuse me. Sometimes this happens. I have a thought, and I have to write it down so that, anyway, there we go. I have written my thought down. Okay, on to another topic. Fort Hood shootings, the Florida shootings. These shootings come out at very specific times. Now, talk about smokescreen news, and this has dominated the news for the past week. Well, what else is going on in the background? Healthcare reform being passed in Washington, that's not being aired to the public. other legislation regarding more control of the public. All of this in the background as these shooting news, and of course what's becoming obvious to the people that really can see through this is that there must be thousands of these shooters hidden in around society, that they can pop them out, push a button, and these people will go postal on a moment's notice. And so at any rate, that's exactly what's happening. And in my opinion, also Hurricane Ida, a very manipulated storm coming up through southeastern Central America, through, I think it was El Salvador that got hit the worst, and then up across the Yucatan Peninsula, up into the Gulf, and up towards New Orleans. Gee, where have we seen that before? But another cover story, very much a manipulated storm, out of season, no reason for that storm to be there. After a hurricane season where there were none, all of a sudden we have a hurricane forming in the Gulf and dominating the news. So, anyway, I guess you can start to see the pattern here. Sunspots, another week without any sunspots. They're still talking about sunspot 1029 and using satellites on the far side of the sun to talk about it, which is ridiculous because historically sunspots only count if they're on the side of the sun facing us. So you can't really count sunspots that are on the far side of the sun. Why? Because it would skew the data, because historically, going back all the way to Galileo, we did not have satellites on the far side of the sun, so we only counted sunspots on the close side of the sun. And so anyway, for NASA and the scientists and all the other web pages to keep talking about this single sunspot that's been there for about 2 weeks, missing the point that there are still really no sunspots. We are setting vast number of records here regarding the lack of sunspots. And of course, I've done some shows with Coast to Coast on that, following that very specific topic. Okay, I think I've covered all of the main science topics. Oh, I forgot to give the mail order address. I gave the website address where you can order all the sale items, and I would encourage people to stock up, by the way, on those filter elements. It's just something that you're talking about years and years and decades, possibly, of needing fresh water. I wouldn't, at that price, I would stock up on some water filter elements. And by the way, we've stocked up getting ready for this sale. So we're ready, everything's sitting there in stock, ready to ship out. So. And this is something I really believe people should have, so I'm making a big effort on my part to stock up and be ready for people who really are going to need these. That's the one thing you're going to need. So anyway, the webpage, of course, is JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com, JMCCSCI.com. The mail order address, JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E, Minnesota, that's M-N, 55392. Once again, JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, Minnesota, 55392. And let me just quick go down those sale prices again. The stainless steel full-size Dalton, regular 319, is now $289. And you get the free radio, you get free shipping to the 50 states, and a free bonus, the Surviving Planet X Passage pamphlet. By the way, for Canada, $21 shipping flat rate, and for any other foreign country, $41 flat rate shipping. Okay, the high-density polyethylene water filter comes with five filter elements, which is a good deal in itself. Regular $219, $199, $20 off. The personal Dalton water filter, regular $89.95, now $69.95, and the best deal of all, the filter elements, normally $89 for a set of two, now you get two sets for $130. And then the books, four books, three DVDs, and the CD of Southwest American High Altitude Photography Pictures, normally $140. $99. And these would make great gifts to people who you think need to find out about what's really going on this planet. Okay, just a quick note here. Mercury has a comet tail, and discovered by NASA's satellite, the Messenger satellite, which is working its way into a permanent orbit around Mercury. But I just want to mention that in my original work back when I was at Cornell University, 1979 to 81, in my original papers dealing with the plasma discharge comet model and the new model for the solar system and many other issues that go with that, I said that one of the things that will come out of this eventually is that they will find Mercury will have a comet tail. And it's very necessary because Mercury's orbit precesses. It has an unusual condition in that its orbit is not a perfect Keplerian predictable orbit. So I said Mercury will have a comet tail, and that's the cause, because the material is coming into the planet, causes a drag on it, and that will be the cause of the precession of the orbit of Mercury, which is very slight but detectable. And, of course, now they have discovered that, but, of course, they have to try and pretend like it's no big deal and doesn't have any effect on anything. Anyway, just quick mention of that. Mercury, as I predicted, has a comet tail. Okay, on to the main science topic. You've seen this in the news, and NASA is backing this with funding. It's called a space elevator. A space elevator. We all know what an elevator is. You go in, you push the button, you go up three floors, and there you are. And so elevators have been very useful. They're used in constructing buildings. And so, in fact, every building high-rise that has ever been built uses an elevator or crane-like system to get materials up to the top floors as they're building. So elevators are well known, but how about an elevator that goes 23,000 miles up into space? At first, it sounds like a pretty ridiculous idea, but then people started taking it seriously. And there's actually a contest, and I should say that some of this stuff is very interesting, where they use a remote power source, beam a laser to photocells. That creates the electricity that runs the motor, which makes the elevator go up a shaft or whatever. But anyway, there are contests, and people are working on this, and there's some very innovative science going on there. So I don't want to knock that. But there are some problems with trying to build one 23,000 miles long. Some real problems. And, of course, this is being touted as a replacement for rockets getting things into space. But you're going to find very quickly that rockets do something very important, and I'll tell you right up front. Rockets don't only go up, they go sideways too. And that's a very important part of a rocket's trajectory to get something into orbit. It doesn't just go up. The biggest part of its work is to get the object going very fast in low Earth orbit, about 17,000 miles per hour. That's going around the Earth about once every hour and a half, more or less. But so the rocket does two things. It goes up and it goes sideways. So when you see the big launches coming out of the Kennedy Space Center or whatever, they go straight up, and that's what normally you see on the camera. So people think, oh, it's going up and in orbit. But what you don't normally see is that rocket eventually, when it's usually kind of out of sight, starts tilting to the side and going in a lateral direction and therefore puts the object into orbit. So you not only go up, you have to go sideways, so to speak, in layman's term. So at any rate, let's look at some rotational dynamics. I'm going to teach you some real physics tonight here dealing with rotational dynamics. Now, we've all seen figure skaters. And a figure skater will go out and they'll do a spin. And they start with their arms out, and they start to do their spin, and then they pull their arms in, and they go very much faster. And then when they want to slow down, they bring their arms out, and they drop their skates, and that's a spin technique for a skater. Well, they're using a principle of physics, rotational dynamics, and it's basically the conservation of momentum, conservation of the angular momentum, it's called. And basically what happens is that when you pull your arms in, the physics of the situation, you speed up rotationally. The rotational velocity, it's called, speeds up or increases. As you move your arms out, your rotational velocity slows down. And so basically, you could look at this as a force that's making you speed up in the rotational sense or slow down in the rotational sense. Now, the idea of something tethered to the Earth in orbit around Earth originated with a guy named Arthur C. Clarke. He said, if you took an object and you could get a string long enough and put that object out into geosynchronous orbit, which is around 23,500 miles from the surface of the Earth. That's where the geosatellites are, the ones we use for telecommunications, for TV, for all kinds of communication, the military satellites that stay in geosynchronous orbit around the Earth to track for communications, the GPS satellites, all of those being in a geosynchronous orbit. And in other words, they stay right above the same point on Earth. Something in a low orbit, like a low Earth orbit, what we use for like the space shuttle, goes much faster. And so it would be moving across the sky relative to you if you're standing on the Earth. A geosynchronous satellite, that's where your outside antenna for TV or whatever is focused on one spot, and that satellite just sits there relative to our spinning Earth. So at any rate, the original idea came from a guy named Arthur C. Clarke, who, I don't know how long, decades and decades ago, originally proposed that you could have an object tethered to the Earth in geosynchronous orbit, and it would just sit there. And so, at any rate, that's a concept that they would like to use for a space elevator. Now, okay, the concept of Arthur C. Clarke is sound, that you can tether an object, it's going to have a force outwards, a radially outward force called centrifugal force, balanced by the inward force, which in physics is called centripetal force. They're just opposing forces, so the string then would create the centripetal force, the naturally occurring centrifugal force, the outward force that's natural to something spinning on the end of a string, would be balanced, and you could have an object just sit there in an orbit around Earth. And so at any rate, that idea is sound. But now, what happens when you try and make that into an elevator? In other words, you put something on that string, and it has some traction, and you can send a beam of energy to it. That beam of energy is collected by a solar cell, which drives a motor, which would cause something to ride up that string. This is what they're talking about. And of course, the string would be made of carbon technology, very strong, very lightweight string. So all of this potentially could be doable. What's wrong with this picture? And it's what's really amazing is that NASA, with its fleets of scientists, would not understand this, would fund this project, the elevator project, without blinking an eye. But there again, you have to understand that when NASA puts its approval on something, everybody goes, oh, it must be sound science. Let's take another example. The three-blade wind turbine system that is a very, very inefficient, very poor design. And it's used universally in the wind, electric generation using wind in that industry. So at any rate, that's just another example where NASA has sanctioned a very bad design, which then becomes universally used. So let me get back to the space elevator. So basically, what you're going to see is more bad NASA science And why don't we just why don't we just hire Bert Rutan to have a highway or a runway to space, a real launch system, and build a system that would really work over and over and over again? Why not do that? Well, because that would put NASA out of business, because now you could have commercial space where anybody, basically with some cash and some backing, could build, just like you could have an airline. Now we have many, many airlines that fly people all over the world and all over the country, and it's very easy. And there are companies that simply repeat build these the jets. They're all pretty much of the same design. They all work fabulously well, and they're used, anybody that wants to can buy one. What if we had a space vehicle of the same nature that was built to take off from a runway, go up into space, drop off something, pick up something, take people, you know, set it up, and then what if we had a space train that went between Earth and Moon? It was in a constant orbit around Earth and the Moon, and going out, we'd take a launch from a runway, go up and meet up with the space train. We could have many, many space trains. Drop off materials in the space train as it comes around Earth orbit. That takes it off to the Moon. The launch vehicle, which is not a rocket, but actually just like a jet airplane, comes back, lands on Earth, and this would be a system that would be in use continually. It would be a way of getting to the Moon, and then when the space train comes around the Moon, it drops things off. They drop into lunar orbit, and then ultimately down to the surface of the Moon. That would be the system to develop, not a space elevator. That the problem with this, well, here comes the problems with the space elevator. Just a second, I have to take a drink of water. Okay, the space elevator, let's go back to the skater. Now, the space elevator, the idea of an object just tethered on the end of a string, that's a good idea. That's the Arthur C. Clarke idea. By itself, it's okay. It's a good idea. Now, try and run something up that string, and they want to do this at about 100 miles per hour, mind you. But let's take the example of the skater. The skater, remember, pushes those arms out, and guess what happens? It slows down. The rotational velocity no longer is going to be the same as the original system. So if you try and send something up that string to the tethered satellite, or the tethered chunk of rock, or whatever you have up there, now you have a problem because you have a lateral force. Remember that the rocket does two things. It goes up, and it goes sideways. And it has to go sideways, pushing with the rocket engine to get that thing into orbit. So what they've failed to consider in the space elevator is very simple physics. That as you go up, you're also going to need a force laterally, and to do that, you're going to have to carry some fuel. Not just a little bit of fuel, but a lot of fuel. So now you're starting to carry fuel up the elevator. And of course, that overrides the entire intention of this, is to get away from having to use fuel. So that somehow, magically, through all of the meetings of this device to try and get things into space, they've forgotten some very basic, simple physics. It's bypassed NASA, all the review boards, all of the people that are trying to build this, people attending meetings, people in the space elevator contests, etc. One very small concept seems to have escaped them, and that's this principle that can be viewed in two ways. The rocket goes up and sideways, or as the skater puts their arms out, they slow down. It's the equivalent of putting a force on the rotating body. It's as if you held your arms in, and there was some magical force that all of a sudden started to slow you down. So as this payload would start to ride up the string to the tethered satellite, it would start to fall back. This is rotational dynamics, very simple. College freshmen, or even now, high school junior seniors are learning these principles initially. It's one of the very first things you learn in physics. Is first you learn linear dynamics, the dynamics and forces and equations of motion, constant acceleration, linear for linear motion, then you go to rotational. So it's really kind of the second stage of your learning when you just start to learn physics. This concept has totally escaped NASA and all its review boards for funding this this process that simply, due to basic physics, will not work. Okay, so let's go to, I've tried to list the top 10 reasons why this will not work. And, oh, by the way, did anybody see the Taurid meteor stream this past week? I saw a lot of these. They're bigger than normal. They go slower, and they're very brilliant. So it was very fun to watch some of these. And there are not many of them. There's only a couple per hour, so you have to really be on alert. But one I saw, I was driving up on a ramp on a freeway, and all of a sudden looked up in the sky, and there was one through the sky. Very, very beautiful. And that ended basically tonight. It was going on for the past week. I pre-announced it last week on last week's show. So at any rate, here we are, the top 10 reasons why the space elevator won't work. Okay, electrical discharges. If you start to put things out into space, extended things, you're going to create an electrical discharge. And here again, NASA does not know anything about this. Absolutely ignorant to the topic of discharges in outer space. So let's go back to another example. I believe it was back in the 80s when the shuttle was first underway. There was a group out in San Diego, and I happened to have the mispleasure of meeting these people, a bunch of scientists in a little think tank out in San Diego, and they were working on a thing called the Tether Project. Originally, they wanted to drag a tether through outer space. This tether would generate, drag a line or a wire through outer space and try and generate an electric current that could power things on the space shuttle. And I told them, don't do this. This is a stupid idea because you will discharge the local capacitors up there. And of course, we don't know about anything like that. And so they actually tried this experiment. They took the shuttle, opened up the bay doors on the shuttle, let out a tether with a weight on the end of it, and they were going to let this baby out quite a few miles, I think like 10 miles or something, like I can't remember the exact distance. But this thing didn't get out more than a couple hundred feet, and it discharged the local capacitor up there and nearly blew one of the bay doors off the shuttle, knocked out all of its computers, completely destroyed the electronics in the shuttle, and they were able to get back down on a single old backup computer. Now, let's talk about putting tethered things out in outer space, NASA. Bad idea. So why would they now propose to put one that's 23,000 miles long into outer space? They sure didn't seem to learn their lesson with the shuttle issue. So, electrical discharges. Also, remember that hurricanes, tornado systems, violent thunderstorm systems, typhoons, in fact, the El Nino is actually a heating of the Pacific Ocean due to electrical currents that come in from outer space. And that's, of course, unknown in the standard science industry, which would include NASA and NOAA and the other alphabet soup government agencies. But that electrical energy comes down, the stuff that Tesla was collecting to distribute was coming from the ionosphere. And the stuff, the energy that powers hurricanes, if you need more information on this, see my weather book. And all my other books talk about this also. But basically, as you try and put something far up into the atmosphere, it's going to discharge that vertical electric field. So the vertical electric field of Earth will discharge, and they will never get their elevator built past, a couple thousand feet before that baby starts to discharge. and they're going to have some problems. So trying to extend this thing out into outer space shows complete, absolute lack of understanding of the electrical nature of the atmosphere, the ionosphere coupling, and the extending this out to outer space. So how they get to this is just beyond me. The people would think they could somehow do this, but of course they don't know anything. You have people doing this, and then you come back to the real reason for doing this. It's a smokescreen. This is one of my favorite reasons, and it's just laughable, regarding this elevator system. NASA says that rockets are dangerous. My goodness, rockets are dangerous, so the space elevator will be a safe way to get things into space. Well, all I can say is that the only reason rockets are dangerous is because NASA had bad designs. The Morton Thiokol, the pads between the solid fuel boosters on the shuttle that caused the first shuttle disaster, simply a bad design. And so what more can you say about that? The other shuttle disaster was when they were actually coming into the atmosphere, so it had nothing to do with rockets. Actually, rockets are very, very safe. The Russians have launched repeatedly thousands and tens of thousands of launches with their big rockets out in the middle of the central Russian plains. So rockets are not dangerous. They're actually a pretty good way to get big things into space. But as I said, the real way to get objects into space is to build a runway to orbit, low Earth orbit, a transportation system. And I just want to add one very quick note, that the airframes that are used in your standard aviation jet today, all the way from the little ones up to the big ones, are fully capable of going into outer space. It's only a 14 pound per square inch separation between outer space vacuum and inside, and those airframes are fully capable of taking that pressure differential. So at any rate, it's just amazing that, what you'd probably do is drop the pressure quite a bit, maybe down to about half of that. Humans are very capable of withstanding those low pressures, obvious from climbers who can go up to the atmospheric pressure at ground level. So given that, we could easily build a transportation system from runway to low Earth orbit and have tons of companies out there doing this, just like we have an air transportation system in this country and in all the countries of the world. What if the tether snaps and all of a sudden comes whipping down around the Earth? Can you imagine a 23,000 or longer, some of these that they want to get up to 100,000 miles. Can you imagine a 100,000 mile strap whipping around the Earth at high velocity, killing millions of people, as it did so, two or three times wrapping around the Earth, snapping around the Earth. Good grief. You know, you want to talk about something dangerous. You want to talk about a whip. Also, I want to mention that as this tether sat in the atmosphere, they want to park it out or anchor it out somewhere in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. It would be a constant source of electrical discharges, and you would have a constant storm system driven by currents from the ionosphere around that site. So it would not be exactly the kind of place you'd ever want to be because of all of the storm activity. Oh, okay, let's go on. Let's see. Rockets are dangerous. I already covered that. Anything but the truth. Let's just talk about that. The real issue here is, well, I'm sure that you'll see it on the cover of a lot of the trade magazines, the glossy ones you could pick up on the newsstand, but if they can buy 2 or 3 years of time out of this absolutely absurd, ridiculous idea and divert the public, which really is not able to discern these simple things and understand that this is just a big pile of you-know-what, then they can buy a couple years. So it's a smoke screen in which NASA doesn't have to do anything, and they can buy time, still get their government-supported salaries, and not do anything. So it's simply a smoke screen. Okay, I could go on and on, but I've hit the basic reasons for why the space elevator simply will not work. It's a bad idea, should have never been funded, but then again, that's exactly why it is getting funded. It's a smokescreen for real science, for real issues, or a real way to get into outer space. And of course, NASA's spending money on that is a simply another diversion, because that's all that space has become, is a diversion. Look at what NASA's two stories of the week: the space elevator, a ridiculous idea that won't work, and debunking 2012, but going directly at a concept called Planet X. And of course, totally distorting the real issue regarding Planet X. What's the real issue regarding Planet X? That these things have happened in historical times, that large comets come into the solar system, and that's the real issue with the Mayan calendar. They talk about the objects coming, the Quetzalcoatl, which was the plumed serpent god of the sky, the comet that whose heart eventually became the planet Venus. So that is what the true meaning of the Popol Vuh and the Mayan calendar is all about. But remember that the Mayan calendar is a modern construction. It came out of around 700 AD, not the calendar that would have been here thousands of years ago. So that whole issue of the Mayans and the true history of the Mayans back to the what they call the pre-Columbian cultures, the ones that occurred around 700 to 800 AD, relative to the pre-Coco cultures, which occurred thousands of years ago, which were the true ancestors of the Mayans, and those are the people that came through the great disaster, the great worldwide flood, the conflagration when Venus came through the solar system. So at any rate, well, that's a very complex topic, but you can see the amount of misinformation. They actually went to all the trouble to make a movie so they could debunk it. That is a lot of work, a lot of money. $200 million Hollywood special effects movie simply to attack the concept on a worldwide scale of the idea of Planet X. And of course, they minimize the issue regarding Planet X. Planet X is not just, and you'll see this too, people that criticize me on the internet, some of the white hats out there that criticize me, minimize this idea that somehow Planet X is just one object, and that's not at all what I say. So they totally distort what I say, then try and attack it, in which is a standard disinformation technique. So if a lot of people read that and never really look at what I'm really saying, they could be dissuaded from looking further into my work, the real work that I'm doing, the real statements that I'm making about the many Planet X objects, that they really look like large comets, and that they really did come in historical times, and on, all of the real facts. So just a quick summary of last week's show. By the way, I'm sorry, the web feed was not working on WWCR last week. They did get it fixed, but in basically what I talked about was the health industry and how the numbers don't add up when they appropriate money. Who's going to do the work? What doctors? There are not enough doctors and nurses and medical facilities for this huge influx of patients that are going to come in. A lot of those people are going to live in the system, use it daily, especially people from other countries or people who have never had health insurance. It's going to be an absolute disaster. Anyway, make sure you get your water filters. Make sure you stock up on the water filter elements at a great price. And I'm out of time. Jim McCanny here. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.